On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we preview Team USA. Earlier this week, we previewed all the challengers in this year's WBC. Who could potentially dethrone Team USA? But remember, the Americans did not win it all in 2023. They are back with as stacked of a roster as we have ever seen in this sport. Can they win it all this time? We preview everything involving the Team USA roster, the coaching staff, and more. We run through some news and notes, tell you about the Olympics, tell you about Max Scherzer, and then, of course, it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world optimistic that this plucky underdog USA team can make some noise in the World Baseball Classic. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And is the term overdog, does that exist?
It should. That is a way funnier term than overwhelming favorite or front runner or contender. Let us know. Has anyone ever said overdog with a straight face? On this episode, this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we preview Team USA. Yes, I am rocking the red, white, and blue on my cap, partially because the Dodgers of Los Angeles, I'm wearing an OKC Dodgers hat for those only listening, are the only undefeated team left in spring training, hilariously. Even when they're not trying, they're still the best baseball team. But in truth, this red, white, and blue representation on my hat is in honor of Team USA, who enters the WBC as the clear best team in the field. And so after Wednesday, we told you all about the potential challengers. This episode is going to focus on America. Let's do it. It's our opener.
For all of America's baseballing prowess, for the so-called American pastime, Team USA has drastically underwhelmed and underperformed throughout the history of the World Baseball Classic. This will be the sixth edition of the WBC, and in the previous five editions, Team USA has won just one title. That was in 2017. And has made the finals just one other time, and that was in 2023. Now, things are certainly on the upswing as it pertains to the best players caring about this, but on the whole, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. For a country that has between, 65 and 75% of the player population in the major leagues, or whatever it is, Team USA has been unbelievably disappointing. However, this squad has enormous redeem team vibes.
I don't know what percentile roster we are looking at here. And obviously we have talked plenty about the pitching, which has certainly been the focus in relation to last time. But even on the position player side, I'm sure there's a way you could estimate it if you looked at, okay, how many of the top 20 or top U.S. WAR leaders, on FanGraphs are playing. I mean, the top three are on the team, right? In Judge, Witt, and Raleigh. But I think we're looking at 90th percentile roster, 93rd percentile roster.
Yeah.
This is really, we're going to get into the specifics, but we've been talking about it for a month now, but I really, now that we're just preparing and comparing the teams, I don't really know how much better you really could have asked this roster to be. And I don't think we should overlook that as we enter the tournament. And it's part of why we are going to be using the term overdog so much, because this team should win. This team is so good. And this team should definitely win it all. But in a very, very abbreviated tournament where it's a very small number of games and baseball is a weird sport, nothing is certain.
Now, it is not this simple. And I've referenced this in the past, but in front of me, I have the list of MLB Network's top 100 players. And I put this together because I'm a loser. It includes how many of them are in the WBC in any fashion. And as I scroll down this list, Jordan, I'm looking for effectively the best American players that are not participating. On the pitching side, the most obvious name is Garrett Crochet, who I saw throw his debut down here in spring training. More on that later. He is not participating. Beyond that, I guess Mookie Betts, but like, is Mookie Betts really one of the best nine American players in the world anymore? Probably not. I guess Kyle Tucker, you could say, should be in left field over Roman Anthony. That would be a big one, but it's not like a glaring one. Trey Turner, you could say, should be on this roster. Then the fun one is like, should it be Nick Kurtz instead of Bryce Harper? Am I willing to ask that question out loud? Like, you can make that argument, but when you look at the when you look at it player by player, should it be Corey Seager as like the DH? You know, maybe.
Sure.
You know,
maybe.
But
maybe.
I think as far as the position players go, it is not 90th percentile. I think it's like 98th percentile. The pitching is a little bit different. Okay, the pitching's a little bit different. Are these the best pitchers in the United States? Certainly some of them. Certainly quite a few of them. Are these the best relievers in the United States? Kinda. And so when we look at this team, because this is the a full assemblage of the best that the United States has to offer from a baseballing perspective, the stakes for this team have never been higher. Because in every previous tournament, in every previous World Baseball Classic, the United States had an excuse in its back pocket if it needed it. Oh, well, yeah, you know, we lost, but like, we didn't have all of our best players. That is no longer the case. It is win or it is shame. Those are the options.
All right. So what is the path to victory or the path to shame?
Shame.
I think we need, well, so first of all, let's just remind everyone. Team USA is in Pool B. Pool B is taking place in Houston, Texas, with their competition, which includes Team Mexico, Team Italy, Team Great Britain, and Team Brazil. Mexico and Italy, as we outlined on Wednesday's episode, are two clear sleepers, two teams that could give Team USA trouble. Great Britain and Brazil should not be giving Team USA even an ounce of trouble. And if they do for any amount of time in these games, that would be highly concerning.
An all-star team of American minor leaguers, I would pick to beat both Great Britain and Brazil.
Comfortably, yes. And so...
revenge game, revenge game against Great Britain, though. You know, a lot of history there.
That's true. That's true.
War of 1812 lingering in the background.
That's true. I'm sure that will motivate all those Bahamians on the roster. I'm sure that's going to make a lot of difference for them. But okay, so that's the pool, right? Now, let's get to the schedule. And we're going to get to the lineup too, but I think we can't go any further without talking about some of the big news of the week. And part of, as we start to sketch out what this path to victory is going to look like for Team USA, we now are starting to have a better idea. And that is the big news: Tarek Skubal is only going to pitch once. This was revealed earlier this week when I think it was either right before or right after Skubal's spring outing. He told reporters, including Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic, quote, "I'm making one start. The reason I didn't announce it originally is I wanted to keep momentum for the WBC. I'm making one start, then I'll stick around for a few games. I haven't determined what games I'm going to watch. If they go to the finals, I think I'm going to try and lobby to just go watch and be with the guys." Additional reporting suggesting, although this is not fully confirmed yet, but it does seem like Skubal is going to start that second game against Great Britain, the order of pool play games: first one March 6th against Brazil, second game against Great Britain, then Mexico, then Italy. As we sort of discussed with the Dominican and Venezuela pool, the order of games here is also kind of compelling, right? Because Team USA in a scenario where maybe they drop the game against Mexico to start the tournament or drop the game against Italy, it's a little bit different than they should be 2-0 in a blink, and it's going to be a little bit different. But let's talk about Tarek Skubal's decision. Let's talk about the fact that he is pitching against Great Britain, and let's talk about the reaction to this, because the people being like, well, what's the point? Why is he even bother to go if he's going to go pitch against Great Britain? Or any amount of surprise that this is the case. I think we have to zoom back out and remember how shocked we were that he was even participating to begin with. And then I think go from there.
He's a free agent at the end of this season. And
he's the free agent at the end of this season.
He's the free agent. He will, if his arm does not explode or he gets arrested for tax evasion or becomes a Tibetan monk, break every record for a free agent pitching contract, right? The stakes for him specifically are very high. And from a pure ruthless cost benefit analysis perspective, he should not be in the WBC. And that is why we were so surprised he was doing it, because for Tarek Skubal, like, he should be taking every possible step to protecting himself. And if we're going to be doing this tournament again in 3 years, presumably he's still one of the best pitchers in the world in 3 years. And he has enough money in his pocket where he could play 100 WBCs and feel secure. So that's why we were surprised he was doing it. And I do think it is fair to be disappointed by this news. I don't feel misled necessarily. Him throwing against Great Britain is better than him not throwing at all. Like, it will be an entertaining thing. He might throw a no-hitter. Like, in 5 innings or whatever. Like, it's going to be great television to watch. However, it feels a little silly. It feels a little bit like overkill. And I think what is disappointing about it to me is that he's not pitching against Italy or Mexico, which, you know, those are in theory the two more important games. And look, like, do I trust Logan Webb to get the job done instead of Skubal against those teams? Yeah, like, he's really good. But it's not Tarek Skubal. And so I think people that are disappointed in that, who are like, isn't throwing against Great Britain the equivalent of beating your 9-year-old nephew in one-on-one? Like, yeah, maybe a little bit.
Well, I want to get back to who is going to be throwing against Mexico and Italy in a second. But just to kind of close the loop on Skubal, I just want to add this quote too, that he also said, quote, "It's kind of the best of both worlds. That was the communication I had with those guys. There's some risk, obviously. I'm trying to do both things, trying to pitch for Team USA, but also I understand I need to be here with these guys, get ready for the season. I think it's kind of the best of both worlds in that aspect. I'm grateful they took me in that capacity." And this is also part of why I was not surprised. When we saw this roster and we saw these reports, oh my God, Skeens is doing it. Oh my God, Webb is doing it. Oh my God, Joe Ryan and McLean and blah, blah, blah. The whole time, I was just like, listen, there, and this is, by the way, still true, and we're not necessarily going to know exactly what the restrictions are on any of these pitchers once the tournament actually gets here. I think this is a case where it needed to be made clear a little bit ahead of time that he was only going to have one start. But this is going to be a reality for all the teams in the tournament in terms of how they're managing their pitchers. So it's fine. I agree it's a little bit silly, but it is what it is. Now, you mentioned, okay, well, I trust Logan Webb. Based on Logan Webb's schedule so far this spring and how he's talked about it, it does seem that Logan Webb is going to pitch the first game against Brazil. Mm. I could be wrong about that, but that is how that lines up. However, let's also bring in the other pitchers here. Logan Webb and Paul Skeens, the two other best pitchers on the staff, have made it clear that they will be sticking around and that they do intend to start multiple games.
Unlike Tarek Skubal, they love America.
Sure. Sure. And by the way, the other thing about Skubal is we're focused so much on, oh my God, he's going to make so much money, he has to stay healthy. Tarek Skubal cares about the Detroit Tigers, and this is one of the most important seasons in Detroit Tigers history. And like, yep, he needs to be healthy for them.
He gets
to
that.
Be any. Yeah. Yes. And so he gets that, and I don't want to overlook that part of it too. We're always so focused on just like, oh man, I hope Skubal gets paid.
Totally fair.
No, he needs to be good on the Tigers. But let's focus on Webb and Skeens now, because we hear from them directly that they're like, no, I'm sticking around. No shade to Tarek, but like, yeah, I'm going to, quote from Webb, quote, "I'm going to see it through. I'll be there the whole time. I want to be there the whole time with the guys." Paul Skeens telling Ken Rosenthal in an interview, quote, "We win. We go as far as we should. I'll pitch again in the tournament." He's like, you'll see me again. We go as far as we should. I'll be there.
I'll be there. Bye.
I'll be there. Bye. Great reference to some serious BBQ lore that most people will not get. Anyway, let's talk about how the pitching could line up and what are the other starting pitchers available for pool play and how you envision, not based on necessarily any reporting, what do we think the lineup is? Let's assume Logan Webb is going that first game against Brazil.
Yeah.
That would put him in position for a quarterfinal game, which is, if they do win Pool B, would be against the runner-up of Pool A. That could be, as we talked about on Wednesday, a very wide group of teams because of how wide open Pool A is. Most compellingly, it could be Team Canada. Team USA versus Team Canada coming off of the Olympics hockey drama would really be something to behold. But it could also be Puerto Rico, Colombia, Cuba, Panama, who knows? That would be
tough
the
month for Rob Z.
Tough money, yeah, potentially. If our guy Rob Z has to watch Canada lose to America and then pitch against Team USA, that's going to be tough. Semifinal would be against the winner of the Pool D winner versus Pool C runner-up. So that would likely be either Dominican or Venezuela, or if Japan doesn't win, or if assuming Japan wins that pool, you know, Taiwan, Korea in that other pool, right? So not Japan until the final, right? They can't face Japan until the final. That's an important place to
convenient
establish right up. But then if we do get what we're all hoping for in a lot of cases, or a lot of people are hoping for, which is the rematch in the final, that would be March 17th. So seven games to cover. When you look at the starting pitchers available, how would you line it up if you were DeRosa? How do you think this shakes out?
How would I line it up, Jordan? I would let Nolan McLean pitch every game. You know that. My crush on Nolan McLean has not been hidden. He would pitch every inning he would be hitting to. He is a gift. Yeah. I would go Logan Webb in the first game, Tarik Skubal in the second game. I would throw Skeens against Mexico, and then I would throw Joe Ryan against Italy. That would be the kind of the top four.
With McLean, maybe?
Mm-hmm. With McLean as the piggyback there. Or, like, we know, I'm pretty sure Chelsea Janes of SNY, that sounds weird, good for Chelsea, reported that Nolan McLean told her that he's going to be mostly piggybacking, but he expects to pitch in two games. And so the way that you can kind of read into that is I would imagine it does not make sense to piggyback McLean off of Skeens, and you would probably piggyback him off of a different pitcher. So I would imagine McLean piggybacking off of Ryan on that March 10th game against Italy. You have Webb doing the quarters. The semis then becomes kind of the game you need to, you bullpen game it or you cover, you mix and match, right? Where you dip into the Matthew Boyds and maybe the Clay Holmeses and you run, or maybe you throw McLean earlier because you want him to cover more innings in that semifinal game, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you run him off of Tarik Skubal on the March 7th game against Great Britain. So you just need to make sure you have enough guys on March 15th in the semis, then the final you have Skeens. Paul Skeens. I'm painting you a word picture. All right. I'm painting you a word picture. Paul Skeens starting on the mound against Japan in the final, but where is he? No one knows where Skeens is. He's missing. First pitches in 15 minutes. The roof at Lone Depot Park opens and in from the horizon, a fighter jet at Mach 20. It flies around the stadium before landing on the outfield grass. And from the cockpit in a baseball uniform holding an American flag steps Paul Skeens, glove in hand, ball in palm. And he struts to the mound and he says, I still need to warm up.
He does the flyover, I think is what you're getting at.
Yeah. No, he does the fly
and
in.
And then we have to wait for him. Or he
flies in.
He does the flyover
he lands
and
in.
Like jumps from the
parachutes in. He could, yeah, he pulls the chute.
Or he flies it. We have to wait for him to land and then get through Miami traffic. And
Paul Skeens.
All right. Well, I do like this vision. This is a great idea. This is a fantastic
Thank
perspective.
You.
If you see Big Paul here in the next couple of days in Florida, make
Top
sure
Gun 3. Big Paul.
I know we haven't thought about Skeen's flyover yet, right? Because he hasn't really played in those, like at least with the Pirates, hasn't necessarily played in those big games yet. But Maybe someday. So we'll
the first time we'll Paul anyway, Skeens, okay, so, the first time we get to watch Paul Skeens watch a flyover, that'll hit.
Oh, that's true. How did it, yeah, like did it? Was there one in Omaha? I can't remember. Okay, anyway, this is the other thing about the pitching we have to talk about. So there's a lot of ways you can line it up. Those are the starters available. You mentioned, right. So Webb, Scooble, probably the first two games. Skeens, one of those next two. McLain, Joe Ryan, Matthew Boyd, Clay Holmes, Michael Wacha. Clayton Kershaw, separate conversation. We'll get to him. The other thing I want to mention about Scooble, if we know he is not pitching in the knockout stage, the Team USA is going to be able to add another pitcher. And so we know that their designated pitcher pool includes five pitchers who are interestingly all relievers, but I just want to name who those guys are. Tim Hill, Jeff Hoffman, Tyler Rogers, Matt Strom, Will Vest. One of those guys, my understanding, is will be added for Scooble. And it's possible
they should have multiple to race
of those guys if another one of these starters is not actually participating in the next round. That is plausible, right?
Whoever wins in a 100-yard dash gets to be the guy.
quite the variety there of pitchers, right? Like that you have a Tyler Rogers, but also and a Tim Hill. Like you got some funk, but you also have some harder throwers in Vest and Hoffman. So I don't know what DeRosa is going to want. Maybe that's going to depend on who's in the knockout stage. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But that is the starting pitchers available for them. Let's talk about the relievers now. Then we'll take a break and come back and do the lineup. Because you say, okay, well that's a heck of a rotation. Did they get the best American relievers? I mean, I think they did a pretty good job. In fact, again, reliever F4, kind of silly, but they do have the top three American relievers by F4. Actually, top four. Top four, which is, you'll never guess who number one is in this group, or maybe you will because he threw a bunch of innings. It's Garrett Whitlock.
I looked at it. It's Garrett Whitlock.
Garrett Whitlock.
It's Mason Miller. Mm-hmm. It's David Bednar. Yep. Those are the top three. I believe four is Will Vest.
So four is Will Vest, who I just mentioned could be added. And then five is Gabe Spire. Six is Griffin Jacks, who is also on this roster. So they got the guys. I mean, this is the group. I don't know how you would probably, like Whitlock seems to be more suited for maybe more of a bridge role if he needs to get, four or five outs. We're not seeing, there's really no situation where Mason Miller should have to throw more than one inning in this tournament. I really do believe that because of the guys here and because of just like, if I'm the Padres, I'm like, listen, fine. You want to take Mason Miller? That's great. He ain't doing an up down. Okay. Like if Mason Miller wants to go out there and throw his one inning, throw 100 miles an hour. That's great. Brad Keller also probably suited for more of a longer role. So Keller, Griffin Jacks, Whitlock, Bednar, and then Garrett Clevenger, who's probably the most anonymous player on this roster comfortably, but like also a lefty who's got some real stuff. So those are the
lefty
two lefties,
who struck out 12 guys per nine last year with a 2.35. he was the annual award winner of anonymous Rays reliever. That's way better than you realize. And I think that you're right. These are really the best American relievers. In a weird way, American relief pitching is down, which is just like a blip and a weird quirk of last season where if you look at, again, you look at reliever war, Cade Smith, Canadian, Aroldis Chapman, Cuban, Mora Hone, Cuban, Brian Abreu, Dominican, John Duran, Dominican, Edwin Diaz, Puerto Rican, Robert Suarez, Dominican, Venezuelan, Andres Munoz, Mexican. Like there just weren't that many dudes at the top of this list. And so I do think they did the best they could. Griffin Jacks, another former Air Force guy. So maybe he flies the plane, drops off Skeens via parachute. He can be back by the end of the game to throw in relief.
So I guess my question is, now let's talk about Kershaw. It's very simple. Does the guy throw a pitch?
Yes.
I don't. I think they have to be
if
up
they
by
didn't
like a
think...
lot. I don't think it is a certainty. I do not think it is like you are going to pitch. I think it is. I actually think it is less likely he pitches than likely that he does.
I completely disagree. I think that if they wanted Clayton Kershaw to have this experience as a thank you for your service, they could have just made him the assistant pitching coach or the bullpen.
True. We're going to We're going to get to the coaching staff in a little bit.
Like, that's what this is, right? And I do believe that he's on this roster to throw innings in the first two games against Great Britain and Brazil.
Plural innings.
I think he throws an inning. I think he throws a full clean inning against either Brazil or Great Britain so that other guys don't have to do it. Now, you could have a conversation. What's the point of that? Like, just get a better guy to do that who then you could maybe use later. Sure. Could I see Kershaw being taken off the roster before the knockout round for one of those other arms? Seems like a reasonable decision to make.
That's actually a good point. That's actually a really good point. I somehow did not consider that. But yeah, he throws an inning against Brazil and then you put an actual other pitcher on there. Yeah, that's actually probably exactly what's
going to happen. Dante Bichette Jr. takes him 470 to dead center and they call up Matt Strom.
The nightmare scenario is like you bring him in up by seven and suddenly you're only up by four. And it's like, oh God, but, like that's you can't. But probably doesn't let it get that far. So we'll see.
What is the hardest pitch Clayton Kershaw throws? What is the hardest pitch he throws?
See, this is why we podcast together. I think we had this conversation when we talked about him being on the roster. I don't remember exactly what I said. I think it's going to be like 87 because it's like the dude hasn't, there's no way he's actually been preparing. I don't think he's preparing for this in any sort of meaningful way.
I disagree.
Like I really don't.
We know for a fact, I don't know if I told you about this, but I was on the phone earlier this offseason with friend of the program, Brent Honeywell, who congratulations to Brent Honeywell.
Yep.
Signed a deal with the San Francisco Giants. He told me, Brent, who lives in Dallas in the offseason, Brent's like, yeah, I got a call from Kershaw. He's like, can we throw? And I was like, why do you want to throw? So we do know that Kershaw, this is not entirely rolling out of bed. Now, he's not doing a normal offseason. He's not lifting. This is not 2015 Clayton Kershaw, like, you know, strolling, like doing everything possible to win a Cy Young. I get that. But I think he's been throwing bullpens. Like,
no chance.
He's not just.
I don't think he's.
How many bullpens has Clayton Kershaw thrown this winter?
His family. He finally retired. He finally got to
Of course,
this is it. I'm actually home. I'm actually get to not do baseball things. I don't have to prepare my body that has essentially been crumbling slowly over the last half decade.
I'm not saying he's grinding to be greatness, but he threw a bullpen to someone in catcher's gear over the last 4 months. He had to have.
Yeah.
It's not like he has time to be dad and throw a pen. Over under. Well, I mean, we can ask him this. Like, we will have someone ask him this for us. Over under. I'm sure Andy McCullough, who wrote the book, can ask Clayton for us. Over under 3.5 bullpens from game 7 of the World Series
under 3.5.
We'll do what? Just say March 1st. Can we just say March 1st when Team USA meets?
Yeah, like before I assume once he reports the camp, he will start doing baseball.
He'll have to play baseball.
But I'll take the under on 3.5.
Yeah. Under on 3.5 bullpens from game 7 of the World Series until March 1st. Great. I will inquire about that right now.
Great. Looking forward to that. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, we talk about the greatest lineup ever assembled. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbershop.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. In 2023, Team USA did not win the World Baseball Classic. And as the cycle, you know, kind of progressed and we got closer to the 2026 WBC, a lot of the attention for that disappointment was thrown onto the pitching staff that showed up in 2023. And some of that is fair because it was Adam Wainwright and Miles Michaelis, and Team USA had, the ninth fastest average fastball velocity in the tournament behind, you know, China. That's not true, but you get my point. And I'm here to say justice. Justice for those dudes. Because why did Team USA not beat Japan? It's because they scored two runs. In the final, Japan won 3-2 in Team USA's lineup of superstars, MVPs, and studs of different, you know, stars and stripes, didn't get the job done. And so now we will pivot to the position player group tasked with making the world feel bad about itself in a baseball context.
We begin behind the dish where Will Smith returns. Will Smith's awesome. So, like, how much better could you realistically get? Well, last time, the other two catchers were JT Realmuto and Kyle Higashioka. This time, they have Cal Raleigh, who just hit 60 home runs. So, that's a pretty good situation. So, you go ahead and you have Cal Raleigh there. It's on your team. So, that's pretty cool. Pretty good,
yep, good that's
setup.
Good.
This is also one we talked about with some of the other favorites. It's like, okay, are the catchers going to play every game? Or are they going to just straight up alternate? And I think that that's a reasonable assumption. However, this is a case where, like, when Cal Raleigh's not in the lineup, your team is not as good. I mean, Will Smith is fantastic. So it is a little bit of a different conversation than when, okay, you disagree that if Cal Raleigh's not in the lineup, the team's not as good.
I mean, that's true if he could play second base or left field, but like, Raleigh at catcher and Schwarber at DH versus Smith at catcher and Schwarber at DH. Like, Will Smith is who do you think is going to be a better hitter this upcoming season? Who do you think is going to be a better hitter this upcoming season? I think it'll probably be Cal, but if it was Will Smith, no one would be surprised.
That's all right. Cal Raleigh's good. You know what? You're right. Cal, I understand your point. I understand your point because of the other players on the team, and this is getting at how ridiculous this lineup is. So that is true. I am saying, though, that like, Cal Raleigh on the bench, there's not other teams with 60 homers on the bench. That's my point.
I understand that. But I would be
that point.
But I would be surprised if it wasn't just a straight alternation, if that's a word, between these two guys. That's how DeRosa did it in 2023. With JT Realmuto and Will Smith. Kyle Higashioka was the third catcher on that roster. He played like two innings. This time around, they don't have a third catcher, which tells me that it will just be a swap. We could see situations maybe where a guy comes in late for the other guy. Maybe, you know, there's a really good right-handed reliever on the mound. They want Raleigh to switch hit from the left side against that guy. I could totally see that happening. Mm-hmm. At first base, it will be Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper is one of the most interesting characters in baseball this upcoming season for a variety of reasons. We will talk about that as we get closer to opening day. He's probably going to get six, if not all seven, of the starts. Paul Goldschmidt is also on this roster. There is an argument to be made. I would not make it, but there is an argument to be made that Paul Goldschmidt deserves a start against a left-handed pitcher. Paul Goldschmidt is not what he once was. But he kind of still is what he once was against lefties. Like, he's really good against lefties still. That being said, it's difficult to envision putting Harper on the bench, right?
Yeah, I think it's way more likely you just save him, Goldschmidt, for a pinch hit situation. It wouldn't stun me if he does get one start. Goldschmidt is one of the big trends of this team. Only five holdovers from 2023. Goldschmidt is one of them. He was along with Pete Alonso on the team last time. So,
yeah. And he was hitting third in every game. I think he hit third in every single game last time and played first, started. He was one of four players who started every game, position players. It was Mookie, Trout, Arenado, and Goldschmidt. Obviously a very different group this time around. As we move to second base, this is where things get kind of interesting. I actually would like to back pocket, Jordan. Let's back pocket the second base, third base conversation as Bryce Terang, sure. Ernie Clement, Alex Bregman, Gunnar Henderson. That quartet probably fills those two spots, the second and third, in some form or fashion. I want to come back to it. Mm-hmm. Bobby Witt Jr. is the shortstop. I think he gets six of the seven starts and Gunnar gets one at short. That would be probably in pool play. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Gunnar got the Great Britain start just to give him one game over there, get Bobby off his feet maybe a little bit. But Bobby Witt is the shortstop on this team. Bobby Witt, weirdly, is one of the holdovers. He was the pinch runner on the 2023 team. I don't think he got a single plate appearance. And if he did, it was very low leverage. At the time, he was like, hey, this kid will be good one day, but he can really run. And now he's the, excuse me, the third best player in the world. And it is not close.
One of my favorite kind of things preparing for the WBC, and you'll see if you read our previews at Yahoo, which you can check out. I did Pool C and D, Jake did A and B. It's just fun to think about where a lot of these players were when they were in the tournament
years ago.
There's so many examples of that. And Bobby Witt, in this case, was coming off his rookie year where it was like, damn, Bobby Witt's going to be good. But he had a 722 OPS, right? And he finished fourth in rookie of the year. And it was like, okay, like we're excited. But this kid's got some work to do, you know, and he's 22. You know, we'll see what happens. Obviously, since then, he's clearly become one of the handful of best players in the world. There's a lot of examples like that where it's like, oh, yeah, he was on the team last time, but he was in a very different point in his career. Bobby Witt is a great example of that. He is amazing, and he should be playing every game. But I understand if he once we get to the knockout stage, he will be the shortstop. But I could see Gunnar maybe getting a start in there at some point.
The outfield seems pretty set. I would be surprised if Aaron Judge does not start every game. And
yeah,
I shocked. Would probably like shocked. Stunned.
They don't have
that many outfielders.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge being on this team is a big deal. Thank you for listening to my podcast where I say obvious things, but I feel like we have not so much of the attention has been on like Skeens and Scooble and this pitching staff. Because that is different. Whereas like getting the best offensive players in the world is not necessarily that different. The reason Judge didn't play in 23, if we remember, is that it was right after he re-signed with the Yankees in free agency. And so in his mind, it was important for him to be there for the pinstripes. This time around, there was no reason for him not to do it. And I'm so glad he is involved. He's the best hitter on the planet. Like Shohei Ohtani is a better player because he pitches, in my opinion. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the world. And he's going to hit second or third. And I can't wait to watch it. I just can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's Mike Trout is not the best guy anymore. It's very sad. Mike Trout, you know, we kind of got him. That's another thing, right? It's like, oh, where's Trout? Well, we know he's not on the team anymore for a few reasons. But getting Judge there is wow. Also, you can imagine Aaron Judge was like, you know what I would love to do? I would love to go win a trophy. That'd be great. I'm trying my best with the Ooh. Yankees. Hasn't happened yet. I'm not Ooh. Saying it won't, but I am saying you can imagine that Aaron Judge is like, you know what? This looks like a good time. And he said like, after I saw us lose last time, he's like, you know what? I could do something about this because I'm one of the best hitters in the history of the sport. So yes, Mark DeRosa, I will participate.
Left field will be Roman Anthony. This spot was originally Corbin Carroll, who had a hamate boo-boo and had to pull out of the tournament. And in steps Roman Anthony, the 21-year-old sophomore for the Boston Red Sox. Anthony was the number one prospect in baseball heading into last season, debuted, I believe, in June at some point, had a sensational 71-game stint with the Red Sox before injuries kind of derailed his season. He was not available in the playoffs. He is the most important player on the 2026 Red Sox, and he is a really interesting character because they just don't have another left fielder, and he's going to probably play every game. Anthony, who turned down Vinny Pasquantino and his request to play for Team Italy. Anthony has an Italian heritage. Does Italy throw behind Roman Anthony? Something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I do just think the dynamic of, you know, we've talked about a few injury replacements already that most of them have been on the mound for a lot of these other teams, and they'll just kind of slot in at the bottom of the depth chart. And it's like, all right, well, we probably aren't going to want to use some of these replacement pitchers in a lot of these cases. This is the opposite. He very well might start every game, and sure, he's probably going to be batting, you know, seventh, eighth, or ninth, but that is still a huge opportunity that he previously was not going to have because Corbin Carroll is also one of the best players in the world. So very, very cool. Looking forward to see him participate there.
Dude, his name's literally Roman.
Yeah, that's tough. Tough look for Team Italy.
Italy, like
center,
man. That's like losing Mike Napoli.
center field, Byron Buxton. This is another great one because it's like, wow, you would think that Byron Buxton, of all the people that would maybe be scared to get injured, Byron Buxton's earned this, man. I mean, he, not that he played 162 games last year, but he's been amazing. When he's played, he's been amazing. And as depressing as the state of the Twins are right now, I love that Byron Buxton gets to remind people that he is one of the best players in the world. That is true. That is Byron Buxton. He has generally fulfilled that prophecy that was foretold when he was putting up outrageous numbers in the minor leagues. And this is an awesome opportunity. And also, like, he deserves to, and we think will start it most games in center field over Pete Carr Armstrong. That said, because of Buxton's injury history, I would not be shocked if this is a situation where maybe he doesn't play back-to-back days in spring, right? Like, I think that Buxton is going to play the important games because he is the better player and he has earned this. I would expect in the knockout stage he will start all those games. But I don't know if it's as – and I know PCA, the way he's been talking about it, is prepared to be more of a defensive replacement. Not that Buxton needs to be replaced defensively, but defensive replacement, pinch runner, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we'll be mostly Buxton, but I think PCA will get a starter. I don't think PCA will get a starter, too.
I think he gets two. I think Buxton and PCA will alternate the pool play games, and then Buxton will play all the knockout games. That's just my – my guess. And then DH will be Kyle Schwarber. I would be surprised if there are any games where Schwarber doesn't start at DH. In 2023, he was on the roster. He got a couple DH starts. He got a couple left field starts. Probably won't happen this time around. Maybe he gets one out there. That'd be interesting to see if, you know, against Great Britain, they get Anthony off his feet and get someone in the DH spot. That wouldn't shock me necessarily, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. But I think Schwarber is in the lineup every day. He's the biggest home run threat. He hit that home run against Yu Darvish that I joked about on the last episode that still hasn't landed.
Yeah.
I'm so excited that Kyle Schwarber will be involved. And then the bench, I guess we have just named all these guys already. Let's move back to the second base, third base conversation before we put all the hitters in an order. We'd line them up, as it were. So there's a number of different ways that Mark DeRosa can go about this, right? If you want to just do offense, if you're just like, let's do offense, Gunner's at third and Bregman's at second, right? If you want to if you want to do the matchup, you can do righty-lefty. You can have Bregman and Ernie Clement, the right-handers, at third and second against the lefty.
And Goldschmidt.
And you could,
sure.
And Goldschmidt, sure. But just keep it to these two positions. And then you can do Gunner and Bryce Terang is the lefties, right? If you want to focus on defense, you can put Terang at second and probably Gunner at third, right? There's a lot of different ways that you can mix and match this. Oh, interesting. You would do Bregman at third over Gunner for defense?
Yeah, I know. I understand like Gunner is still playing shortstop, but that's probably close. I mean, is that just probably because close. Like Gunner is, yeah, I mean, I understand Gunner is still a shortstop, so you kind of give him that edge, but I don't know. Bregman's still a very good third baseman.
But, yeah, I would take Gunner.
I hear you. Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of ways that this can play out. And I think that's a good thing, right? I do think having some flexibility on the roster is valuable. I would probably just do Gunner at third, Bregman at second. Terang comes in for Bregman in the seventh to play defense. And Ernie Clement is there to, you know, make jokes and play against Brazil in the seventh inning.
Yeah. Or run. You know, he could.
Or run.
He could, Ernie as Bobby Witt Jr. is like from last time is an incredible sequence of events. All right, let's put these names in order. And then I want to talk about the coaching staff quickly, and then we will take a break. So, remember, we talked at some point recently when we were getting into all of Bryce Harper's juicy spring training quotes where he was like, I'm excited for Aaron Judge to hit behind me. That is really the only piece of information. I haven't followed every single quote that Mark DeRosa has given so far. Camp is going to open up early next week, and I'm sure he's going to start making it more clear what this lineup is going to look like. That said, what is your best guess at how this lineup, what this looks like, particularly once we get to the, you know, single elimination games where all is on the line. What do you think this is going to look like?
I think Bobby Witt Jr. is leading off. I think Bryce Harper or Kyle Schwarber is hitting second. And I think the other one is hitting fourth or fifth. So I'll just put Bryce in the two hole here. So I'll do Bobby, Bryce, Judge, Schwarber, Raleigh, Bregman or Gunner at third. Then I would probably do Buxton, Anthony, Terang. That would be my order.
Pretty good. Pretty good ball club.
Sounds like runs. Sounds like hits.
I would say that, is there any way that Bobby Witt does not lead off? I will point out that he has not really led off at all in Kansas City the last couple of years.
That's just because they have Mike Kell, right?
A good amount in 23. But I just, no one else really makes sense to lead off.
The guy on this roster with the most leadoff plate appearance in his career is Schwarber, probably, right? Kyle Schwarber. Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think DeRosa does that.
I mean, the other argument, just back to the first point of Harper hitting ahead of Judge, is like, shouldn't Judge be hitting second? Shouldn't Aaron Judge be getting more plate appearances? Like, come on now.
Probably.
I don't know how much Judge is going to bother going right, left. Well, that's definitely not happening. But I think at some point you probably should be hitting. Like, this is a great transition.
I think there's a Gunner. Okay, so like, I think you could argue for Gunner, Judge, like Schwarber, Bobby, but he probably, DeRosa's like gonna want Bobby's speed higher than that. I think
100%. I think this is gonna be it. I'm saying, and this is a good transition to our final topic, which is the coaching staff.
It's so funny.
Just imagine like Aaron Judge ends the tournament on deck. Bryce Harper grounds out to second. Oh boy. Bryce Harper's listening to the pod. He's not going to be too happy with me. Here's the deal.
He's not listening, dude. He's on busing with DeRosa, the boys.
That's true. Mark DeRosa is a main character. Mark DeRosa.
Mm.
Let's go. Let's see it.
Let's do it, brother.
You got to win. You got to make it happen. You got to push the right buttons. I don't care what pitching restrictions you have. I don't care what nonsense is going on behind the scenes that's dictating who's available when. I don't care. If Team USA doesn't win again this time,
DeRosa
it's
out.
Hard
if
to
he
imagine
doesn't win, DeRosa
Mark DeRosa
out.
Is getting this gig again next time. You look at the coaching staff. There are some holdovers.
I love the idea of like DeRosa doesn't. They don't win. They keep DeRosa, and then in the 2029 tournament, USA fans have DeRosa out signs. You know, like an English Premier League game.
100%. There are some holdovers from the staff. Andy Pettit returns. Brian McCann was on the staff last time, as was Michael Young. Dino Ebel, of course, very, very a prominent Dodgers coach, is back to coach third. I am very compelled by the replacing of Ken Griffey Jr. As the hitting coach with two new hitting coaches in Matt Holliday and Sean Casey. You could say that's true. You could say they didn't get the job done. Freddie Gonzalez comes in to replace Jerry Manuel. David Ross is now the bullpen coach, which is very interesting. George Lombard replacing Luke Collier at first base. But Mark DeRosa, the pressure is on, sir. You are a huge part of this. This is a situation where we are the manager, I think, does matter. As silly as that is. Although it's also funny because it's so goofy because when we said, well, the manager is about how you handle the ups and downs of a long season, how you manage a clubhouse, it's like, well, that's not part of this, but it is a very long 2 weeks where you have to make sure everyone is on the same page, and we'll see how that goes.
I sort of disagree. I think the most important part of this job, this very specific job, is the in-game decision making. Yeah. And I think that is not the case for a big league manager. during a full 162 or even during 20 whatever games in the playoffs. I do think even then it is about keeping people on the same page. Here, I think it is really hard to not have everyone on the same page. Like, yeah, you have to communicate and have set expectations for how much everyone's going to play. But these are not just big leaguers who are adults. These are the stars' stars. And they know what they signed up for, and they understand what this is. And I don't think they're, like, if you lose, like, they're going to just be better than the team in the next game if it's not a knockout game. Like, I don't see how they, like, get down on themselves and they, like, lose oxygen. You know what I mean? So no, I think I the job for
I know.
Him,
I know.
The job for DeRosa is to make the right decisions in the moment, okay? The job for the rest of the staff is to just be good vibes. Because no one is coaching here. No one is doing development.
That's why it's so funny.
Okay? No I one know. Is here to change anyone's swing or make adjustments, right? This is about famous people that are fun to be around being around. That is it. Okay? And I guess Michael Young needs to just be giving DeRosa good advice. Michael Young as the bench coach is the only selection on this roster that made me raise my eyebrows a little bit. I would have picked a bench coach that's a bench coach. Now, maybe it's hard to get a bench coach to leave big league camp because they're actually doing the job. But I would have looked for someone who's like a bench coach to be the bench coach. But that's just me. And I have faith in Mark DeRosa to do this time around. And if he doesn't,
I wish they were in the same pool as Nicaragua so Dusty Baker could, like,
oh my God,
out manage DeRosa somehow. It's a game anyway, oh. But whatever. It's just such an interesting, it's a singular job, this responsibility to coach Team USA in this setting and under these circumstances. And I cannot wait. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we'll go around the league. Jake will tell us about Red Sox again, and we'll give you a good about the other. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbershop.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Two more things we need to talk about. One WBC related, one related to heterochromidia.
Let's begin with a very important thing to know before the WBC begins in a week. We just talked about Team USA and their chances of winning this tournament, which are quite high. But there's another big baseball tournament coming up in a few years, and that's the Olympics. Ever heard of it? Yeah, baseball. Back in the Olympics in Los Angeles or somewhere in the United States.
In the snow?
In 2028. Oh, no, summer Olympics.
Oh,
and although that now I'm interested. Okay, could we get a little bit in? What is it, in France, right in the Alps?
Could we Alps, yeah.
Get some baseball involved in 2030? The Olympics are going to have baseball in 2 years, and we have all been wondering. Okay, baseball? We're going to have baseball? Yes, we are going to have baseball. But this bit of news came out a few weeks ago, and it is very, very important to understand as the WBC gets started. There will only be six teams participating in the Olympic baseball tournament in 2028. One of them the United States.
Can I hop in?
Because they are the host. Yeah.
The USA is playing. I think this is just very important to be clear about. There is a lot of conversation about whether or not major league players are going to participate in the Olympics. That is the hope. That is unclear. And that is yet to be determined. What is certain is that the Olympics are going to have baseball. There was baseball in 2020 in Tokyo. There has been baseball in the past. Typically, the people that participate in that when the big league season is going on are minor leaguers. Even back in the day, it was college guys, you know, independent league players. We are not sending our best. And it is important to understand the tournament is happening whether the big leaguers are playing or not. And what happens in the WBC will dictate who exactly gets to be in the Olympic tournament.
Resume. Yes, and that is why we are bringing this up now. And we were going to mention it on Wednesday, but while it is not relevant for USA because they're going to be in it no matter what as the host nation, in the WBC, how teams fare in the WBC will impact qualification. In fact, two teams, the two top finishers from the Americas that are not Team USA in the WBC will be qualified for the Olympics in 2028. And that is the last time those teams will have the opportunity to qualify for that tournament. Okay. What that means is that the Dominican, Venezuela, Mexico, Canada, Puerto Rico, which I do believe even in Olympic competition is competing on its own.
Yep.
They're only two of those teams are going to be in the Olympics. And that is going to be based on where they finish in this WBC. There will, of course, be three more teams after that that will be filled in a couple of qualifying tournaments, the Premier 12, and then another one closer to the Olympics. Those are only going to involve teams from Asia, which we assume one of them will be Japan, Africa, and Europe, and Oceania. So Australia will have a chance too. But if you are one of these other baseballing hotbeds like DR, Venezuela, Mexico, etc., this is your chance to qualify for the Olympics. As you mentioned before, we have no idea if big leaguers are going to be in this tournament or not. But if they are, that is going to impact a lot of the best players in the world. If Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez and Fernando Tatis Jr. have dreams of playing in the Olympics as well, the DR has to be one of the top two finishers of this group of teams from the Americas in this tournament. That is a gigantic deal, even if we are not going to even remember that this was the case until a few years from now. So I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that.
And what's probably going to happen is one of these teams won't get, like, the math is the math. Two of these teams make it. And so there's very much a scenario where, let's say, the Dominican and Mexico make it. And in 2028, it's like, where's Venezuela? Why aren't they in the tournament? Why is it Acuna not at the Olympics? And the reason is this. So you'll remember this in 2028. Yes. Yes. Remember this conversation that Jordan and I had.
So let's make sure we hit on that. All right. One other thing we need to talk about is a bit of news. Oh my gosh, free agency is still going on, at least for some guys. Max Scherzer is back in Toronto. $3 million deal with the Blue Jays. Incentives for more money. Not that Max Scherzer needs more money. Max Scherzer's still pitching.
Thank God Max Scherzer's got incentives. I was worried.
You were in the clubhouse with me after Game 7 of the World Series, and Max Scherzer, who
just the three of us.
Max Scherzer started Game 7 of the World Series a few months ago. Oh my God, right? The power rankings of, oh my God, that happened in Game 7. Max Scherzer started and was like pretty good. One run allowed, 4 1/3. Unbelievable. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because after that game in the clubhouse, Max Scherzer essentially said, I'm not done. I am not finished. That was not the last pitch that I have thrown. However, even him saying that, when you looked at the situation, and then as the offseason began to unfold, first with Shane Bieber opting in, they signed Dylan Cease, they signed Cody Ponce, Jose Barrios is still on the team, and you say, well, okay, he's not done, but who are you going to go pitch for? Well, it turns out, for reasons that we can speculate on, the Blue Jays have decided, you know what? We could still use Max Scherzer, or at least add him back into the mix to compete for one of these last couple rotation spots with a Cody Ponce, with a Jose Barrios, who obviously has a lot to prove, and then Shane Bieber, who's slow playing it this spring and seems to maybe be kind of hurt. The point is, the Blue Jays maybe don't have that starting rotation depth that we thought. Bowden Francis also, I think, already had season-ending surgery. So maybe Max Scherzer is going to be back on the Blue Jays, which is pretty remarkable.
And we have this great letter from Scherzer's daughter. Like, dear Blue Jays, I hope my dad is back on the team. It's great. That's definitely what
Edward Rogers was personally like.
Oh, you're right. I will spend $3 million.
You're right.
I will give those incentives.
Max Scherzer. So Max Scherzer is back on the Blue Jays, which is amazing. I mean, he clearly had a heck of a time there.
Yeah, he had a great
time. So I'm not surprised that he wanted to go back there, but the fact that there is room, and John Schneider had a good quote, I think yesterday, being like, listen, these guys all understand the situation. These guys are all adults. Like, not all these guys are going to be on the rotation. And it's possible Max Scherzer doesn't, you know, pitch well enough to be in the rotation, but they gave him this deal. So we will see. We will see what that happens. I'm glad that he's going to have that opportunity to get back out there one more time.
All right. I'm in spring training. Let's do a quick field report. You are back in the cold weather, Jordan, after your stint in Arizona, but I arrived in Florida this week. And yesterday I went over to Red Sox camp in Fort Myers to watch Garrett Crochet's spring training debut. And something really weird happened, Jordan. He didn't strike anybody out. Are you worried?
I mean, that is someone that I do not want representing Team USA. And so I'm glad he's not on the team.
Can't even strike a guy out. Garrett Crochet, who I think is pretty squarely the third best pitcher in the world, talked after his start, and I was asked by one of the other reporters, you know, do you view yourself, like, what do you think you need to do to get to, you know, be the best pitcher in the world? And Crochet was like, I think I'm already up there. Like, I think there are obviously two guys ahead of me who have the hardware, but I think I'm right there neck and neck. I thought that was an interesting answer. Just for him to, you know, say Paul Skeens and Tarek Skubal without saying Paul Skeens and Tarek Skubal. Garrett Crochet knows what we know, right? He understands where he stands. And he is such an important character for this 2026 Red Sox team because he was about as good as you can ask a pitcher to be in 2025. And they need him to be just as good in 2026.
I mean, it is a weird place to be when everyone is just like, man, you're the best, but not the best.
The best.
But you are 99.99999th percentile pitcher on the planet.
You're one of my best friends.
Let's be clear. We know you're not number one. I mean, obviously,
it's like a six-year-old's like guys. You're my third best friend. You're my third best friend. You're behind Taylor Skubal and Paul Skeens.
Crochet is incredible. I still kind of just like the workload that he put up last year. My goodness.
Yeah.
Right. We were all like, oh, is he going to be? And he wanted that security. He got that extension and he said, great. Now I can exhale and just go out and do my thing and just
and
pitch
it was
as
true.
Much as I possibly can. Yeah. And he was fantastic. So, yeah. Is there another level for him to reach? I know he is maybe as everyone who isn't adding a new pitch. I'd love for one pitcher to be like, you know what? No. My pitches are good enough. I'm fine with what I have.
You and I should add a new pitch next winter. You see how it works out for us. The one other story I wanted to tell from my time at Red Sox camp is just the omnipresence of Big Poppy and Pedro Martinez, both of whom were on site yesterday. Big Poppy comes rumbling into the clubhouse holding a fungo. And he's like, man, I feel old. Being a coach makes you feel old. And someone says, yeah, Poppy, you look like a coach. He goes, you know, Alex used to have hair when he started in 2018, and then he just leaves the clubhouse. He's just like, Big Poppy's just always doing stand-up. Pedro, you know, a little bit more of a quieter figure. One of the funnier moments that I can remember yesterday. So, you know, Pedro is on the backfield and he's like doing laps, like just going for a jog. And he's wearing this like silver shirt that looks like tinfoil. And I'm like, what is that? And so I went over and I asked him, he was like, oh, this is like a weight loss sauna shirt. And this is one of the most interesting and yet disgusting things I've ever seen. He like undoes the bottom of it, like to let some air in. And it was as if there was a shower head under there. It's just like a waterfall of Pedro Martinez sweat dripping onto the ground. He was like, I bring this with me everywhere. And I go for runs in it. And I was like, how about that? So, yeah, what does that mean about the 2026 Red Sox? Nothing. But I just thought that was an interesting story to share because it's not every day that you get to see Pedro Martinez, you know, present you with a sweat waterfall.
Why didn't he wear that when he came on the podcast?
That's a good question. Forgot we had him on the podcast.
Okay. I was going to say that would have been a good. You should have been like, "Hey, remember me? Remember when we talked
hey,
about
Hey, remember me?" Dude, "Hey, remember me" is the least cool thing you could ever say to a famous baseball player.
No, I
"Hey, remember
I'm
me."
I'm well aware.
Come on.
That would not have been my
that happened
phrasing,
to me
but
yesterday.
I understand.
I had to do a "Hey, remember me" yesterday to Tristan Casas, who we spent draft day with. We spent his whole draft day with him and his family.
That's the ultimate. Yeah.
I hit him with a "Good to see you again." And he goes, "Again?" And I was like, "You remember me?" And I was like, "Oh."
Lots happened to Tristan Casas since then. So I don't.
That's what I said. I said, "You've lived quite a baseball life." Yeah.
All right. Let's do it. It's Friday. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly.
One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing, Dan, ugly, interesting, bizarre, offbeat from the week that was. I will begin my good this week. Chris Sale got an extension with the Atlanta Braves, tacking on another year. 1 year, $27 million for 2027, and a $30 million club option for 2028. That's good. Good for Chris Sale. It's a lot of money for an old pitcher, but he's still probably pretty good. But that's not all Chris Sale got this week, because he got a sword. No, not a bad, uncomfortable swing from a hitter. He got an actual freaking samurai sword. Chris Sale has been with the brand Mizuno, the Japanese brand, for really his entire career. Not a whole lot of dudes are like Mizuno nowadays, especially Gaijin Americans that are, you know, stateside. And to say thank you, Mizuno showed up to camp with an actual sword, a custom sword for Chris Sale. And they handed him the samurai sword. And Chris Sale, who has, I gotta be honest, become one of my favorite people in the game to like watch talk. He's just reached total IDGAF territory. Watching him receive this sword is a real treat. I believe this was tweeted out by Front Office Sports. The best is, as Sale walks away holding the sword, he goes, "I'm finally calling my own pitches." As like, I'm telling my catchers I'm finally calling my own pitches. As if Chris Sale didn't have the sauce to shake off Drake Baldwin.
Well, there's a lot of jokes you could make about Chris Sale cutting things up with this sword. But I will say, I just love this because Mizuno has given him enough baseball equipment in his career, right?
Sure.
And so
Absolutely. They
were like, you know what? Let's make this more interesting.
You know what Chris Sale's not going to give away to a family member? You know what Chris Sale's not going to put in the, the Goodwill pile? The samurai sword. That thing is staying in his house until the day he dies.
Great work, Mizuno. Well done. My good this week is very simple. Connor Griffin, good at baseball, folks. The Pirates' top prospect,
a couple homers
against the Red Sox.
On him this
Jeff
morning.
Passon feature?
I got to read that.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to go over there next week.
I'll read that when we're done here recording. Folks, Connor Griffin's coming. I don't know if he's going to be on the team on opening day, but if you read our final installment of our 26 and under rankings, which came out today, you will see the Pirates prominently placed, not only because of Paul Skenes and all the pitchers behind him, but because Connor Griffin might be preparing to debut in the big leagues as a teenager, which is just not something you see very often. But I just think, we're going to talk about Connor Griffin plenty in the coming weeks. But the very basic thing I just want to say about him, which is so amazing, is that his profile was the kind of profile where you would say, man, if it clicks, like it might take some time. It might take a little, we're going to have to be patient with this kind of player who hasn't necessarily faced the top, but man, the physical tools. And instead, he's just way better at baseball than we ever could have thought this fast, because no one doubted the physical ability at any point over the last couple of years. But it was like, all right, but it's going to take some time, man. He's going to have to adjust. Nope. He's like, Jack, no, I'm good. I'm just going to be awesome at baseball as soon as I enter pro ball. He's unbelievable. I can't wait to talk about him more. And can he single-handedly push the Pirates from the worst offense in baseball? I know they added a bunch of other veteran hitters, but like, can Connor Griffin be the difference? Maybe. If he is, that's a heck of a story. But I'm just so excited that now they somehow have this potential position player parallel to Skenes. Very different background, but yeah. That's an amazing turn of events for the Pirates. So how fortunate they are, and good on Connor Griffin, man. He is a heck of a player.
What's bad this week? The way Giancarlo Stanton feels. This is from Randy Miller in NJ.com. Randy Miller saw Giancarlo Stanton in the Yankees spring training clubhouse and said, "Hey, how you feeling? You good?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm okay." "So you're full strength?" He's like, "No, not really." Quote, "I can't open a bottle. I can't open a bag of chips, a bag of anything. That's the way it is." Stan talking about his physical ailments. Two things about this are bad. One is that Giancarlo Stanton is in that much pain. He is one of my favorite baseball players of the 21st century. He has given this game so much. He endured a lot in Yankee land to kind of come out the other side. Look, he is a flawed player. He can't run. It is funny when he runs. It is sad when he runs. But he is doing his best. He is a productive hitter and an important piece of this Yankees team even still. Has he lived up to that massive contract? Kind of. He is one of the best home run hitters, really, of all time. Like, especially one of the best postseason hitters
of all time, too.
He is amazing, and I am sad that he cannot open a bag of chips. The other reason this is bad is, yes, he can. Yes, he can. There is no way. I know he said this. There is no chance Giancarlo Stanton cannot open a bag of chips. Two reasons why. One, he has the grip. If he can hold the bat, he can open chips. Two, if you can't open the bag of chips, just sit on it. Just stomp on it. Pop that thing open with some weight and then reach in and get your chips. Every grade schooler has done this. You do not need to open it from the top. Giancarlo, this, I'm sad you're in pain, but the chips thing is a skill issue to me.
There's a lot of ugla in this story as well. And I think that's what stands out about this quote, right? Because any reporter, whether it's Randy Miller or whoever, be asking Giancarlo, "Hey, how you feeling?" Like, that is, he is the player that you need to kind of check in and ask how he's feeling, right? So that makes sense. It's, I don't think Randy Miller was like, "Can you open a bag of chips?"
Like, Giancarlo, just a quick one for you.
He went out of his way to describe how much pain he's in by explaining that he cannot do these simple tasks. Whether or not Jake Mintz believes him or not, I don't want to go further on that. The point is like, he went so much farther in describing this that I, that right. is what is both bad and ugly.
Giancarlo could have said,
I'm still Giancarlo kind of said, confounded by.
He could have said, like, I'm still not great. Like, just with my physical ailments, I'm never really going to be 100%. I'm always in a little bit of pain.
He said that many times.
He just went to this chip thing. Do you maybe that morning, like, he couldn't open a bag of chips because, like, his hands were wet, you know, and he couldn't get the traction, and he was still thinking about those chips. That's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Seems like a very, relevant, it's too specific of a scenario. That right. it
he
did
must
not
have
come up in the recent
open some chips.
Open chips.
I think that that's. Yeah. That
but
that's
he can't.
That said.
The quote is, "I can't open a bag of chips." And my point is, yes, you can. You're not going about it the right way.
"I can't open a bottle." That is something I'm actually going to now keep an eye on. Because, you know, you're not usually seeing players eating chips in the dugout. But very common to see between innings, especially someone who's not playing the field. He's sitting there and he's drinking a bottle of water. Well, if he is, I'm either going to say, someone opened that for you, or you're lying.
Hey, Giancarlo, for those of you watching on YouTube. Hey, Giancarlo, I have no career home runs, brother, but.
Oh, man. Wow. Jake, what an athlete.
Look at that.
No, let me finish this conversation by reiterating everything Jake said, which is that this just makes me sad because Giancarlo is one of the coolest baseball players of all time. So it certainly doesn't make me feel good going into this. But I guess we're just so used to this. We're just going to do this until the end of his career, him just telling us how much pain he's in, which is a very weird place to be. All right. My bad this week is one of the easiest bads in the history of this segment. Artie Moreno spoke to some reporters recently, the owner of the Angels. And talk about going out of your way to say something you didn't need to say. How about this? How about this quote from Artie Moreno? being asked, but Jeff Fletcher of the Orange County Register being like, "Artie, man, what's going on right now? You know, you guys, you don't get to talk to Artie very often, so you're trying to check in on the big picture of the organization." And Artie Moreno gives this quote: "The number one thing fans want is affordability. They want affordability. They want safety. They want a good experience when they come to the ballpark." Let's pause right there. Let's pause the quote right there. You know what? That might be true. You know what? That's fine. I think that is probably true, right? The average fan just wants, they want to have a good ballpark experience. That's fine.
I'm willing to not make fun of Artie Moreno for saying that part of the quote.
That could have been, he could have just been like, then I've been like, all right, well, you know, what about, he continues, sure. "Believe it or not, winning is not in their top five."
Oof.
Okay. Why would you, why, what? First of all, there's been no evidence. He's citing a survey that was done. No evidence of where that comes from, what survey you could possibly be talking about. But it's also just preposterous. I mean, it's an insulting thing to say to your fans. It's an insulting thing to say to your players. It is an insulting thing to your say employees. To everybody involved who is the purported is like, what are we doing? He continues, quote, "For me, I've always wanted to win. It's just what is the cost of winning right now?" And this is the tragedy of
really
the
Angels, sounds
right?
Like it, because sounds like he wants to win. It really, to me, that quote sounds like he does want to win. So in my
but
top
this
five.
Is the tragedy of the Angels. They have managed, you could say, well, whoa, what do you mean? Their payroll is higher than a lot of other teams. Yeah, that's true. And they've been the worst team. They have been the least successful team in the league for the last decade, despite having all these good players. And that's an amazing accomplishment. And that they have managed to be bad while spending an above average amount of money this long is shocking and speaks to all the money they're not spending on things that probably do matter when it comes to winning, and the kinds of money that teams like Milwaukee and Cleveland and Tampa Bay and maybe now Washington, where it's like their payrolls aren't great, but you know they're investing in other things that help their baseball team win because they want to win. Even when their owners are telling them, sorry, you can't spend any money, those guys really want to win and they're finding ways to win. The Angels are doing the opposite of that. They're finding ways to lose. And Artie Moreno seems to be a very big part of that. So very troubling. And of course, Bruce Meyer, the new head of the MLBPA, was asked about this by the great Sam Blum of The Athletic. When after Artie said this, Bruce Meyer said, quote, "Let's just say players took notice of it. And we took notice of it, too. The bottom line is players are competitors. They grew up competing every day. They go out. They try their hardest to win every game. And players want to see owners doing the same thing." Amen, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
Very bad. Let's go to Ugla. What you got?
Sure. I'm gonna talk about Matt Waldron's butt.
All right. Tell me about it.
Matt Waldron, kind of a swingman type for the San Diego Padres, like wasn't around camp for a couple days, and you know, reporters took notice. And new San Diego skipper, Craig Stammen, felt the need to, you know, explain Matt Waldron's absence. And so he said, and I quote, "Yeah, Matt Waldron had an infection in his rear end and had to have surgery to drain it and make it better. So he's been in the hospital the last couple of days." This is something that Craig Stammen will learn over time. You don't need to tell the whole truth. Okay. You don't need to tell the whole truth. Matt Waldron seems to have a surgical procedure to drain his hemorrhoids. Just say he had an infection. He's in the hospital. He's dealing with it. And we hope to have him back soon. Because this spiraled out of control a little bit on Waldron, on the Padres, as Us Weekly, of all places, wrote an article, quote, "San Diego Padres pitcher Matt Waldron out indefinitely after his procedure to, quote, drain his hemorrhoids." This article on Us Weekly has a lot of, you know, the meme from Inglourious Basterds with the guy holding up the three, where it's like the, you know, this person does not know ball. There's just a lot of phrasing in this article where it's like he was drafted and then went to train with the low A team. You know, Waldron was drafted by Cleveland in the 18th round and sent to train with the rookie level Arizona League team. So that is true, but you would never write that. Anyway, that's not neither here nor there. The point is, if this is a good rule for all current and future big league managers, I want you to really lock in here. If you have a player with a butt infection that needs to be drained. And you're asked about it. You don't need to say it's his butt. I, as a member of the BBWAA, maybe this is like, I shouldn't be saying this. You could be vague about it. And then like off the record, when you're done talking, you just pull, you know, AJ Cassavell or Kevin Acey aside and say, hey, I just want to let you know it is Matt Waldron's butt. If you could just keep that private for so that he doesn't end up in Us Weekly with like a hemorrhoids headline, that'd be great. That's how I would play it. But I'm happy that it turned out this way because it's funny.
I don't know if it's funny. I mean, the meta of it is funny. The situation, not funny. Bad. The
having an infection drained is not funny.
Of this Us Weekly article, the thing that I'm really curious about is, so the most of the story is quotes from Stammen that obviously it's not like there was an Us Weekly reporter in the Padres scrum. They're just taking it from whoever else.
Or in
the hospital. But they list all these Craig Stammen quotes where, as you mentioned, like Craig Stammen is like pretty much telling you what's going on. And then it says, Us Weekly has reached out to the San Diego Padres for comment.
Yes.
What more do you want them to...
What? Like,
what was the request? Like, what... what are you...
We'd like to know more.
I guess they felt like Waldron? I guess they felt like, okay, if we're going to do a post on this, we better do some journalism. So we have to at least reach out to comment. But like, what do you think that process was?
Matt Waldron's hemorrhoids declined to comment.
Not to Waldron, right? They reached out to the Padres. Like, were they reaching out to Padres PR? Were they just like... I don't know. I'm really curious about that part.
Can you imagine your Padres PR and like you're trying to wrangle Drake Cronenworth to do like a social video? You get a call from Us Weekly about your knuckleballer's butt.
Hi, this is Us Weekly. Do you have a comment on like Craig Stammen told us what's going on? What more do you want us to do? Do you want us to put out a statement?
I want less. Notes right. Happen.
Yeah, do you want to... Anyway, okay. My outglow this week is also so good. It is the release of the ABS leaderboards.
Oh.
And not just for spring training. And when we did our ABS episode, I said, oh my God, I cannot wait for whatever comes up on Savant when we actually get to have this in the regular season. But even more crucially, we have the leaderboards... the ABS Challenge leaderboards from AAA in 2025. Wow. This could be a whole other 20 minutes. I'm not going to do it. All I'm going to say is I encourage you to go check this out, to go look at how our pal Garrett Stubbs did pretty well. You can go see how many times Garrett Stubbs challenged and how many times he got it right. You can go see which hitters were just challenging recklessly and getting it wrong all the time. I'm looking at you, Davison De Los Santos.
Zach
Veen. You can look at the catchers who were unbelievable at this. PJ Higgins of the Reds is apparently an absolute wizard when it comes to the ABS challenge system. He has done it this spring and in AAA last year.
He went 48-14.
Harry Ford, awful, was terrible at this for the Mariners last year. So Nats are going to have to clean that up. And also, if you're just going on like efficiency, you know who's apparently quite good at it. Your shout out on the Wednesday episode, Brian Torres on Team Puerto Rico, right? Yeah, who we think is going to be the Puerto Rico center fielder. He was one of the best challengers of all the hitters last year. So I could go on forever. This episode has gone on for too long, but I'm so excited to have this. It is already so fun to dig through it for the spring training data, but to just be able to look at this all season long is going to be so fun. However, I am going to make the point here. There is something notably missing from this data, but I imagine that a third party is going to fill in that gap. And that is, of course, the umpires.
The umpires.
I do not think that MLB, I have not asked yet, I do not think that MLB is going to put the data related to how good and bad the umpires are at getting challenged. But that data will surface as well, and I look forward to scouring that when that becomes available in season. So... all of which is to say, it is ugly because this is just a category of stat that I can't believe we now have. But I'm so excited that it is part of our existence. All right, we did it. This is Friday. You mentioned, I'm back in the cold weather. joke's on you. It's 50 degrees here in Ohio, and I'm going to go watch some college baseball this afternoon. Shouts out to the Kent State Golden Flashes, who I'm going to go see for the first time. And the Rhode Island Rams with assistant coach Daniel Palka. What a life that we now have. Okay, we're done. Thank you all for listening to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you, Jake Mintz. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, Ingrid Rosas, for producing Fantasy Baseball. Go play Fantasy Baseball on Yahoo. I got some drafts coming up. Very excited to start another Fantasy Baseball season. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you all on Monday. Have a good weekend.